So, welcome everybody, please find a seat at this retreat. I think most people are here. Still a few people coming in. But anyway, well, God, there are still more people coming. Very good. You, is there any more outside, or is that you're the last one? Very good. I think we need to, for the jhana grove, to get one of those little collie dogs. You know, the ones which round up sheep, you know, in the Australian farms, to round up everybody, to sort of muster everybody to come to the talks. But anyway, just welcome everybody to this retreat. And I know that some of you have arrived a few days before, so it's wonderful you've had a time to settle in. Some have just arrived this afternoon. I think a few people have yet to arrive or on the aircraft on the way here. But these retreats which we have here are very much middle way retreats. Middle way means avoiding any extremes, to allow the body to become comfortable, to allow the mind to become comfortable, and thereby to achieve a very deep and wonderful state of peace. So the goal of the meditation is peace of mind. And with that peace of mind, it's not just being quiet, it's also being wise, being kind, being still. This meditation combines everything. My experience of training in Thailand for many years, and also understanding the teachings of the Buddha, the original teachings from the scriptures. Now, this is the genuine way of meditation, to allow the mind to be calm and peaceful. It may differ from other meditations you've done on other places, because it's not forceful at all. I found that when you use force to meditate, it can get you so far, but the mind becomes very tight. And it doesn't have the softness, the relaxation, which is required to get into very powerful deep states of mind. If you use force, you know, to focus the mind, yes, you can achieve a little bit, but you can only go so far. And you have to sort of come back again and learn how to make the mind peaceful and still. And for many of you who have known my teachings for a long time, that's the type of meditation is learning how to be still so insight and wisdom can arise. Realizing without stillness there can never be any wisdom. And any sort of insights we have, if the mind isn't still, are just superficial insights, that's all. You never really get deep into things. And the simile I usually give is a simile of a lake. If there's waves on the surface of the lake, you can never get a clear reflection of the stars and the full moon. And if you look up the sky this evening and tomorrow, the moon is full. It's a very beautiful time to start meditating. And if you go to one of the lakes, the lake down the bottom, and you look at the image of that moon, if there are waves or ripples in that lake, you can't see a perfect image. But you can imagine when that lake is perfectly still, when it's not even one ripple moving across the surface of the lake, you get a perfect reflection of the moon and the stars. And that's just like the mind. To be able to reflect reality, to see things as they truly are, without distortion, you've got to use a mind which is perfectly still, so there's not even a ripple on the surface of that mind. So our goal is to get the mind to be still, so we can see perfectly the nature of things. And to be able to get the mind still, there's a number of things we have to do first of all. And I said it's a middle way retreat, because in order to make the mind still, you have to look after your body, to make sure the body is relaxed, rested, well fed, well exercised. And so for the first couple of days of this retreat, you don't expect very much. And it means that you don't have to, you know, say, right, I've got to meditate, I'm going to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, Or even better, 2:30 in the morning. No, I'm not going to go to bed. I'm just going to sit up here. Because that was one of my stories. And I've got many of these stories. And I give so many talks that most of you have heard these stories. But I still remember the very first WASAC which I went to. It was celebrated at Cambridge University because that's where I got into a Buddhist group. And that was where I first heard the story of the Buddha becoming enlightened, as you usually do here on WASAC days. And that's where you heard that the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree. And he sat and he made this powerful resolution. Even if my blood dries up and my bones turn to dust, I won't move. I won't change my spot unless I get perfect, complete enlightenment. It was a no more shilly-shallying, no more namby-pamby cream puff. You're going to sit here and you're going to meditate until you become enlightened. That's the real great monks and nuns. That's what you really have to do, Sister Gotami, if you really want to become enlightened. Just sit here and push through the pain. I don't care. My blood will dry up. My bones will turn to dust. This is it. I don't care how much it's going to hurt. Enlightenment is more important than anything else. I'm just going to go for it. I'm not going to give in. Whatever that my pain or my body throws at me, I'm just going to sit here no matter what. I'm going to be the tough person. But now, many of you have heard that story. But you know, because when I was only 18, when you're 18, you're very young and very stupid. And I thought, wow, what a wonderful thing to do. And if the Buddha could do that, why not me? So I went back to my room after the ceremonies were finished about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And very solemnly in my room in college, I sat down on my cushion. And I really meant it. I made a great resolution. And I told myself, even if my blood dries up, my bones turn to dust, I don't matter how much it's going to hurt, I'm going to sit here. And I'm not going to move until I become enlightened. I don't care how much it's going to hurt. Even if I die, even if I'm going to be crippled, this is it. I'm going to become enlightened. Because I was a very busy person. I want to get it out of the way so I can do other things in life. And in those days, I used to meditate 25 minutes. 30 minutes was the max. And I got to 40 minutes. 45 minutes. And I still wasn't enlightened. And worse, my body was killing me. You know what it's like? Your knees are just so much pain, you just can't stand it any longer. And your back is exploding as well, and your bottom is so sore. And that's when I opened my eyes. And it was true. My blood hadn't dried up yet. And I wasn't enlightened, and I couldn't stand anymore. And that was it. And I learned a lesson from that. What I learned a lesson from is just willpower is not the way to get into meditation. You have goals, and from a goal you have willpower. You just make yourself more tense. The middle way is something much more different, far more subtle. No goals. A goal takes you off into the future. Something to aspire towards. And you're so busy aspiring towards your goal, you're paying no attention to what's happening right now. All goals take you out of the present moment to some fantasy of the future. So, I stopped doing things like that. Stopped trying to get in line, going anywhere, trying to achieve things. And instead learn how to be here. Because the only time you can find any peace, the only place you can have some meditation is right now. So straight away you can see just the power of letting go of goals and aspirations. Instead, you're just here, peaceful, not going anywhere, not doing anything. Just be. So for the first few days, I just want you to be here. Not being at home, not being in enlightenment, not being in some sort of fantasy realm, but just being here. And that also means I don't know where you've come from. And I don't know what you've been doing, whether you've been meditating and this is, you know, your 20th or 30th retreat. Usually in retreats I see quite a few of these people who come on every retreat, what I usually call, you know, the usual suspects. Every retreat they come on. They've been coming on retreats for years. I've been in Perth 28 years now, and some of you guys have been coming on retreat for 28 years. Still not enlightened. Pretty hopeless. I don't know why you even bothered to come again. That time you gave up. Became a Christian or something, I don't know. But, no, here you are again. So, so I don't know what's, where you've been in the past. It doesn't matter at all. Because, as well as not trying to aspire to get anywhere, because that just takes you into the future. Not lingering in the past. You notice all the negativity of human beings. All their ill will, their anger, their guilt, their depression. All depends on something bad which happened in the past. I don't care what happened in the past. It's all gone. It's finished. It's dead. You're not allowed to bring the past into this retreat. I don't know if Bianca told you, but that's one of the rules. Please, all of your past, you know, leave outside the gate. You're not allowed to bring it in here with you at all. So, if you have any past, no trouble, the usual method, which many of you have heard me say before, is if you do have some pain or trouble or difficulty of the past, some trauma, you've been cheated, people have been cruel to you, you've had cancers, you've had lots of pain and difficulty in your life, you have to let it go. And the way I've asked people to let go of the pain of the past is using the classical psychological technique of writing it down on a piece of paper. Before you let go, you have to acknowledge. You have to bring it up. You have to know what you're letting go of. So if you've had any difficulty or pain in the past, write it down on the piece of paper. And in the Ajahn Brahm method, the type of paper you have to write the pain of your past on, what people have done to you which was really terrible and unnecessary, what you've done to others, the type of paper you have to write this down on is called toilet paper. And there's many in your rooms. So please, whatever shitty stuff has happened to you, that's where it belongs. All shitty stuff belongs on toilet paper. So write it down on just the times you've been abused and cheated and people have been cruel to you, and you haven't been treated fairly, and all the difficulties you've had in your life, please write it down on the toilet paper. And as you write it down on the toilet paper, there is an association with what goes on toilet paper. It's the sort of stuff you don't keep. How many of you, when you use the toilet paper, just put it in your pocket and you spend it on? Of course, you never do that. So that association with writing down the stuff, the bad stuff of your life on toilet paper, just helps you realize that this is stuff you can't keep. And having written it down on the toilet paper, then you read it. You read it carefully to yourself, because it's important to acknowledge it. And then the next step of letting go of the past is taking the toilet paper to the place it belongs, which is the toilet bowl. And you put the paper in the toilet bowl, and then you do the letting go ceremony. And the letting go ceremony is called pushing the button. And as you push the button, all this water comes out, and all the pain of your past swirls around in the bottom of the bowl, and it goes around the bend into oblivion forever. You've let go of the pain of the past. Yes, I know that we do get many blocked toilets in this retreat, but at least we unblock your mind, and at least you have a bit of a more opportunity for being at peace. And it also means that when you come to the interviews, you don't keep bothering me about what your husband said, what your wife said, what your kids are doing, what happened to you at work, how sick you are, all the terrible stuff which has happened to you in the past. Please don't unload that to me. I am not the toilet. The toilet is in your room, so please, that's where it belongs. So just letting go of the past and the future. Why not? And you can do it in here. Because here I don't care where you've come from. And I don't know where you're going to. I don't care where you're going to. Right now you're just a yogi. You're just a meditator. You're a being who's just here. You've arrived. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Now sometimes they say that that's a word in English. When you've made it in life. When you just got to the peak, you've got your $1 million, you're famous, you know, you're healthy, you've arrived. So each one of you has arrived. Right here, right now. So isn't it brilliant? All the planning to try and get here, all the many of you come from overseas, all the going through the customs and getting all your luggage weighed and sitting in this economy class seats, you know, crushed against other people. You know, people just, you know, are going past you and knocking your robe off. That's what happens to me. I try and keep so that my right side is always on an aisle seat. Because if the right side is next to the aisle, people always come and knock my robe off and keep putting on again. And just really a pain. And then you get yourself settled down in meditation and the person sitting next to you knocks you on the shoulder, they've got to go to the toilet. You're just about to get into jhana and they have to go to the toilet. So anyway, you've been through all that trying to get here. And if you just come locally, you've got to sort of clean up all your mess in your house and just get permission from your relations or your kids or whatever. So you've arrived. Well done. You're here. Now you're here. Don't go anywhere. Stay here. I don't know what it's like for you, but you know, if you have a husband, husbands are so much trouble, and they're always demanding this and demanding that, and now you've got no husband. This is a husband-free zone. All of you have got wives, always nagging and asking for this and asking for that, and this is a wife-free zone as well. So isn't it wonderful? You're free. Those of you got kids, no parents. You're by yourself, you're totally free. So remember just, you're free of the past, you're free of the future, you're free of all of these entanglements which stop you soaring high. The less you have, the higher you can fly. So you're free of all these things. This is 9 days of pure freedom where you have no burdens at all. It's also important that most of you in your life, you've always been told you had to achieve something. You go to school, you've got some exam, and you're going to be tested. You've got to succeed, otherwise you get in trouble. You either get into trouble or you have to do the examination again, and that sucks. Here, you've got nothing to achieve. No goals to get. Isn't that wonderful? No one is going to judge you. You just got to be where you are. Nothing to achieve. No sort of list of things you've got to tick off and get done by the end of these 9 days. Look, I guarantee you're not going to get enlightened on this retreat. So give up at the beginning and you have much more fun. Any of you trying to get jhana, you're no hopers. You've been here before. You've not got jhana before, so don't even try. Instead, just enjoy yourself and have fun. And then you might get the jhanas. Well, all of you aiming for something, trying to get something, that never ever works. You should learn that by now. So that's why we don't have any goals. No aspirations. That just takes you into the future. No lingering in the past. Your job is to be here as much as you possibly can. So throughout the day, throughout the night, just keep reminding yourself, you're not going anywhere, you're being here. Too much of life is always going somewhere else. Isn't that the case? You arrived here. You've arrived. Now please stay here for a while before you go somewhere else. But a lot of times we're always on the move, always going somewhere, always the next place, and that's much of our life. You come here, now I want to get jhana. You get jhana, now I want to get enlightened. You get enlightened, then you want to do something else. But actually you don't, because enlightenment means you're stopping. But you get the idea, always doing something else, going somewhere. And this is not a retreat where you're getting places. It's a place, time when you're just being here. Stop all this going, all this traveling. If you can stop all this going and all this traveling, and you stop all this going off into the future and going off the past, you're just being here, what do you think happens? You become peaceful. You've got nothing to achieve. So you've got nothing to achieve, there's no stress on your mind. That's what happens when you've got these goals and you have to get this and you have to get that. You stress yourself out. It's like you stress your body out, and you stress your mind out with all these goals you have to achieve. So here, just be. Going nowhere, being no one. Just here, that's all you are. You start to become still. And that's where you begin to find out. Just being here is where you find the greatest treasure. And this introduces one of my favorite stories. For those of you who have heard this story before, I don't care inflicting it on you once more. Because when you come to interviews, you do the same to me. You inflict the same problems on me, which you told me last year. So I don't see why I can't tell the same stories as I told last year. And that's the story of the old monks, don't lie story. And if you haven't heard that story before, here it comes. There was an old monk who would wander from place to place, not staying in any monastery, but a wandering monk. And he came to a farmhouse one day. And the farmer gave him some food. And the farmer was a devoted Buddhist. And it was getting close to the retreat time. We call the rains retreat. Now the was, the pansa in Thai. And the man said, have you got any place to stay for the 3 month retreat? And the old monk said, no, I haven't. Please come and stay with us. Not far away. It's a beautiful meadow next to the river. I can quickly put up a simple hut for you. And I'm more than happy to feed you every day. All I would ask is once a week you teach me some Dhamma and answer any questions on meditation. That's all. And the old monk said, yes, I would accept your invitation. So the farmer built a simple hut next to the river. And every day the monk would go for his alms food, very simple food, but very nourishing. And the monk could meditate nice and peacefully. And once a week he would teach the farmer and his wife and their kids. And after 3 months they got to love that old monk. He was like part of the family. And so when the old monk said, it's time now for me to go, the retreat is over, they all started crying. And even the dog put his tail between his legs and started whining. Because even the dog fell in love with this old monk. And they begged him, please don't go. Stay here forever. You know, you're like one of us. But the monk said, I have to go. But, said the old monk, I've had some very deep meditation. And in my meditation, I have discovered very close by, closer than you think, is buried a great treasure. I know how poor you are, and I want this to be your karmic reward. I want you to have this treasure. And this is how you find it. Listen carefully. Tomorrow morning, said the old monk, I want you to stand at the threshold of your house. That's just where the door is. I want you to face eastwards towards a rising sun and take up that old bow and arrow which you have, which you used to hunt, and face the rising sun. With your bow and arrow in your hand, when the sun rises, stand and face the rising sun and let the arrow fly. And where that arrow drops, there you will find the treasure. Follow my instructions, and you'll be rich beyond your wildest dreams. And at that, the monk left. The following morning, the father was up an hour before dawn. He was so excited. He knew he would find a treasure. You know why? Because old monks don't lie. And he had the bow and arrow, and he waited for the sun to rise. And as the sun rose, he picked up the bow and arrow, faced the rising sun, and shot the arrow. And the arrow went a long distance. And they all ran after it, the wife, the kids, and the dog. And where the arrow fell, he made his wife dig a big hole. Sometimes men are like that. But don't worry. If you're like that to your wife, you have some karmic reward and see what's going to come up. They dug a big hole, or she dug a big hole where the arrow fell. And what did she find? Nothing, only trouble. Because that arrow fell in a land belonging to a rich man. And that rich man saw them and said, "You are destroying my land. That's against the law. I'm going to sue you. I'm going to fine you. I'm going to give you lots of trouble." And the wife said, "It's not my fault, it's his fault," pointing to the husband. And the husband said, "It's not my fault, it's the old monk's fault." And at that word, monk, the rich man fell silent. He said, "Old monk? I'm a Buddhist, said the rich man. "And old monks don't lie. How come there's no treasure here? What did he tell you?" And the farmer told the instructions of the old monk. And the rich man said, "I know your mistake. Look at you. You're a poor farmer. You've got no muscles on you. You have to be someone rich and fat like me to be able to shoot a bow and arrow." "Look," said the rich man, "tomorrow I will shoot that arrow and we'll split the treasure 50-50. Is that okay, or do you want to go to jail?" So the farmer said, "Okay, I'll accept that deal." So the following morning, they were there, and the rich man shot the arrow in the direction of the rising sun. It went much further. And so they all ran after it, the farmer, the wife, the children, and of course, the dog. And this time, because of the law of karma, the farmer had to dig the hole. And he dug and he dug this huge hole where the arrow fell. And what did he find? Nothing, only more trouble. Because this time the arrow fell in a field belonging to a general in the army. And he came with his soldiers and said, "You're destroying my property." And he ordered the soldiers to cut them off, cut their heads off right there and then. He's a very fierce general. You don't mess around with generals. And straight away, the farmer said, not my fault. The rich man told me to dig this hole. The rich man said, no, not my fault. It's this old monk. This old monk said we'll find a treasure. And at that word, monk, even the general fell silent. And he told the soldiers, "Put away your swords." "I'm a Buddhist too," said the general. "And old monks don't lie. What did he tell you?" And when they told the instructions, the general said, "Look, you stupid people. You don't know how to shoot a bow and arrow. You have to be a soldier, trained in archery to know how to shoot a bow and arrow." So he said, "Tomorrow I will shoot that bow and arrow. And I'm sure we'll find a treasure because old monks don't lie. We'll split it three ways evenly." So the following morning, the general was there. And don't worry, because this doesn't go on much longer. The general shot the bow and shot the arrow. And it went a huge distance because the soldier had practiced. He trained in archery. And they all ran after it. The rich man, the farmer,
his wife, the kids, and who else? The dog, yeah. Dog went as well. And this time it was a rich man's job to dig the hole where the arrow fell. He dug a really huge hole. And what did the rich man find? Nothing, only more trouble. Because this time, the arrow fell in the king's garden. That's big trouble. And the king arrested a lot of them and put them on trial. And he told everybody, destroying the king's garden is a capital offense, punishable by death. Before I execute you, explain what you were doing. And the general said, sorry, it's not my fault. This rich man's fault. A rich man said, no, not my fault. It's this farmer's fault. And the farmer said, not my fault. The old monk got us into trouble. And at that, the king said, hang on. I'm a Buddhist too. And old monks don't lie. I've got to get to the bottom of this. I'm going to put you in jail until I find out exactly what's happened. So he put them in jail. And he sent his soldiers out to find that monk. They soon found him and they dragged him back to the palace. And the king said, oh monk, you've got these people into really big trouble. They're about to be executed. Why? And the old monk said, because, your majesty, they did not follow my instructions. What do you mean? Said the king. Listen, your majesty. Tomorrow, you go to that poor farmer's house. You take the bow and arrow and follow my instructions. And I guarantee you will find the treasure, because I'm an old monk, and old monks don't lie. And, your majesty, out of fairness to all these other people, please split the treasure evenly four ways. Even the share for a king would satisfy you. How much more would it satisfy the poor man? And the king agreed. So the following morning, the king was at the threshold of the house with the general, the rich man, the farmer, the farmer's wife, the children, and the dog. Who else? The old monk. Yeah, I forgot the old monk. He was there too. This time, the king stood at the doorway of the house. He waited for the sun to rise. First of all, he asked the monk. He said, oh monk, am I standing in the right place? Yes, said the old monk, you're following instructions. And he waited for the rising sun. And the old monk said, correct, your majesty, you're following that instruction. He picked up the bow and arrow. Correct, your majesty. And he faced the rising sun. Correct, your majesty. And he was about to shoot the arrow. Wrong, your majesty. What do you mean? Said the king. And the monk said, I told you, your majesty, to let the arrow fly, not to shoot it. And the king understood straight away. Instead of shooting the arrow, he opened his finger and thumb and let the arrow fly. And it fell right between his feet, right where he was standing. And there he got the general to dig a hole, only a small hole. And what did they find? A huge treasure, even a quarter of which satisfied the king and made the farmer and his family and the dog the richest dog in the whole of the kingdom, with a beautiful diamond collar and the best food in a gold doggy bowl for the rest of his life. And the old monk said, of course, old monks don't lie. But it's not that physical treasure you find. When you shoot the arrow of craving, over here, over there, jhanas, enlightenment, insight. What do you find? Nothing, only trouble. But if you let the arrow of craving fall, let it fly, Where does it drop?
Right where you are.
Right here. Right now.
You only have to dig a small hole. And there you will find a treasure beyond your wildest expectations.
Right here. Not the next moment, not tomorrow, not the next day, not the last day.
Right now, right here, if you drop the arrow of craving, let go. There you'll find peace. There you'll find jhanas. There you'll find enlightenment. You know why? Because I'm an old monk. And old monks don't lie. That's a beautiful story. And it's not just a funny story. I had a bit about the dog. Dog's got nothing to do with the story at all. But I add it just to make it interesting. But the important part of the story is that the simile there, even in meditation, sometimes we shoot arrows of craving, wanting something, aiming for something, over there. Right, in this meditation, I'm really going to get, it's deep. This retreat, this is it, I've been here many times, no more messing around. This retreat, I'm really going to meditate. I'm going to get up early, do so many hours, I'm going to really get into it. That is called shooting the arrow of craving. It doesn't matter how deep a hole you dig, you only find nothing but trouble. But if you let go, let the arrow fall. Where else can it fall? Right where you are, right now, right in this moment. And there you find the treasure. That's why all aspirations, all wanting, all aims, all goals only cause you trouble. Just being here is the hardest thing to do. Not going anywhere. Letting go of all craving, all control, all wanting, all trying to fix things up. That is one of the most difficult things to do. But here, you've got the freedom to do it. No one is going to push you. No one is going to judge you. In this place, you can just be. Not going anywhere, just be. Letting go of the arrow of craving. And I tell you what happens. It's obvious when you don't want anything. There's no stress in the mind. There's no busyness. There's nothing to think about. Instead, you're quiet. There's nothing to do. When there's nothing to do, you're at peace. And that's why people always want to get things out of the way. They want to get things out of the way, get all of these jobs done. Why? Not so you can be free to do more jobs. So you can be free of jobs. You complete all your work so you can be free of business. You've done all of that. So now be free of all the busyness of your life, all the jobs. So you've got nothing to do at all. When there's nothing to do, you do nothing. When you do nothing, you're still. When you're still, everything starts to get very powerful and very profound. When the mind doesn't move, that's when the lake becomes still. That's when you can start to see the full moon and all the beautiful stars reflected in your still mind. So remember, stillness comes when you don't want anything. When you want something, you're disturbing the surface of the lake. Even if you want good things, wonderful things, noble things, you're still disturbing the surface of the lake, your mind. So just be here and want for nothing. They say that that's the word to describe the rich people of the world. You know, the Bill Gates here in Australia, West Australia, Gina Reinhardt. All these rich people, they want for nothing. That's one of the ways to describe a rich person. It's always also the word to describe a monk or a nun.
We want for nothing. We don't need anything. We're at peace. That's why it's so difficult to try and get something for a monk. Like if one asks me, what do you want? Nothing. So if you really want to give me a gift, get a nice box, a nice shoe box, or any old box, then wrap it with beautiful gift paper, put a nice bow on it, and write to Ajahn Brahm. And give it to me at the end of the retreat, out of respect. But remember, don't put anything in it. And when I open it, oh, there's nothing inside of it. Wonderful, that's what I always wanted. Because I want for nothing. So please give me nothing. What I used to say to my girlfriend when I was a lay person, give me sweet nothings. And that's just what she gave me. She gave me nothing. Anyway, I don't want to go further down that path. But when you want for nothing, then you're at peace. All this wanting business, that is what drives the mind crazy. And here we're letting it all go. Being peaceful. That is the middle way. Not trying to get rid of things, not wanting things, just being with whatever you've got. And you find that when you stop wanting what you already have, you find it gets more and more beautiful. It's really weird. When you want something, what you already have is just no good. But when you stop and look what you have, and stay with what you have, stay with this moment, it gets more and more beautiful with every second. It's like a simile. It's really hard to get these similes. But the simile which I made up is like on life, we're always moving, always going on to the next thing. And sometimes it's because we've got no place to stop. So sometimes on the journey of your life, you find this old, rough, cold stone bench. It's not even. It's all lumpy. And it's cold and it's really hard. But it's the only place you have, so you stop your journey and you sit down on it for a few seconds. And it's not comfortable when you first stop. But on that stone bench, the longer you sit on it, the warmer and more comfortable it becomes. Soon the cold has disappeared and it's quite warm. Next, the bumps disappear, so it's very even. Next, it's not hard anymore. It becomes soft, like a big cushion, like a sofa. And soon it becomes the most comfortable place you could ever sit. A hard bench transforms into something so comfortable and so wonderful. This present moment, when you first stop, it's not that comfortable. It's hard. It's cold. It's difficult to stay with. But just persist. Stay here. And the longer you stay here, the more comfortable here becomes. You stay long enough, you say, wow, this is beautiful. Why do I want to go anywhere? I'm just having a wonderful time just being here. This is how meditation evolves. When you want something, you get nowhere. When you stay where you are, it gets more and more peaceful. More and more beautiful, more and more comfortable, which is why I often say there is like a tipping point in meditation. When you get to the delightful mind, I sometimes say the delightful breath, you stayed in the present moment long enough, whatever you're observing becomes delightful, enjoyable. You are having a good time. And that is an important part of the meditation, so important. But I encourage you that if you start getting happy when you're meditating, indulge in it, get off on it, have fun with it. Even if you're having such a wonderful meditation and you miss your lunch, I'll give you special permission to have a late afternoon snack. If you just don't worry about missing your lunch. You can always have, actually most people that have such a good time in meditation, they don't even want anything, just so happy, just enjoying the bliss of the mind, having a wonderful day. Don't even think about lunch, even though you know you're not going to have anything till the following morning. So don't worry about your tummy. Worry about your mind and the bliss of the present moment. From stillness we get bliss. And you know what that bliss means? It means you're ending suffering. There are two types of meditation. And this is just for the introduction. And please keep this in mind for the whole retreat. And I'm sure I'll mention this again. The two types of meditation are called Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. And hopefully you know enough about Buddhism to know what the Second Noble Truth of Buddhism is. The Second Noble Truth is craving leads to dukkha, to suffering. And that is called Second Noble Truth Meditation. So if you are suffering, and if the meditation is not happy, you're not blissing out, you're not having peace, you're not enjoying yourself, that means that you do Second Noble Truth meditation. The cause of suffering is craving. You wanted something stupid. So if you crave, even for good stuff, you are creating suffering. So if your meditation is not happy, not blissful, there's only one reason. It's nothing to do with you that I can't meditate. You're just doing the wrong type of meditation. I'm not talking about breath meditation, metta meditation. This goes across all types of meditation. That's why I call it Second Noble Truth Meditation. I want, I want, I want, I want. Result, suffering, 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 suffering. I want to be peaceful. I want to sit for longer than I've sat before. And I just want to sort of stay awake. It's all wanting. Causes suffering. Second Noble Truth. Craving makes suffering. So instead, on this retreat, it's a Third Noble Truth meditation retreat. And the Third Noble Truth, letting go of craving, leads to the end of suffering, nirvana, the ultimate happiness. So, if you let go of craving, you don't want anything, you don't judge, this moment, this is good enough for me, then, because you don't want anything, where does that lead? Happiness beyond your wildest dreams, eventually to enlightenment. So remember, that's how we meditate. Third Noble Truth meditation. Let go of craving. Let go of control. Let go of wanting. Let go of all your aspirations. If you do, all your aspirations, then eventually you get the beautiful delight. That's why I often say there are usually four types of aspirations. First of all, you get inspiration. You know, when you're inspired, you hear a great talk, you see someone, you get really inspired. And after inspiration, you go to the second aspiration, which is called aspiration. An aspiration is when you get sort of, you're inspired, and now you want to achieve it yourself. That's aspiration. So you may be inspired by meditation, and now you're the aspiration stage. Right, here I'm on retreat, I'm aspiring for all these wonderful states. And the third aspiration is called desperation. When you tried so long, so far, and it's not working, and you get a lot of suffering. And the desperation leads to the fourth and final aspiration, which is called expiration. You leave, you give up, it's gone, finished, you expire. So those are the four aspirations, all starting from the biggest. Inspiration is okay, but the aspiration, that's where it all falls apart. So please, no aspirations, no wanting, so peace instead. And you'll find it gets so still. Third Noble Truth Meditation. So even I do that. If I'm meditating and it's not working, instead of just pushing harder, okay, come on, get your act together, Ajahn Brahm. Try harder. Come on, you're a monk, you're a teacher. Come on, come on. I know from bitter experience that makes it worse. So if it's not working, I think, what do I want? I'm wanting something. I'm controlling. I'm aspiring for something somewhere. When I see it, stop it, Ajahn Brahm. Stop, stop, stop. As soon as you stop aspiring and wanting things, then it all disappears. You're peaceful. You're just being here. And what's wrong with this moment? It's good enough. good enough for peace. You stay here. Because there's no aspirations, then there's that fitspiration, there's no perspiration. You're not trying. I'm sure you get some more aspirations sooner or later. You're probably already writing one down or thinking about another aspiration. And you're at peace. And that's what meditation's here for, to learn how to be at peace. And learn that you drop the arrow of craving, and it's a huge treasure. You're at peace. You're still. The happiness builds up. And my goodness, it really blows your mind how peaceful and still you can be. And how things disappear. Have a wonderful time. This is what the meditation is. So the meditation should bring a huge smile to your face if you do the third Noble Truth meditation. The longer you do it, the closer you are to Nibbana. The longer you do second Noble Truth meditation, the more close you are to the hell realms. I remember this one guy, he was taking me to a retreat. It was one of these retreats where they ring the bell at 3 o'clock and you have to get up. And if you don't come up, then they send the big guys to drag you out of your bed. There are CCTV cameras in each bedroom to make sure that you're not slacking off. And they have bells every hour to make sure that you all meditate. And they have these big sticks. You've seen these Zen retreats. They've got a big stick. And if you just nod a small amount, whack! And there's absolutely no talking. If you talk, you get sort of executed. Now in those types of retreats, this guy had been to one of those retreats. And he actually called the retreat center the torture chamber. Every time he came into the room, he thought, they're going to the torture chamber again. Because no, that's what they do in Guantanamo Bay. It's called prolonged stress positions. You know, left leg over the right leg, back straight, head up. They use that for torturing people. It's against human rights. Amnesty International would object to Buddhist retreat centers, one like that. We don't do that here. So this place is not the torture chamber. It's the entertainment center. So you look here to have fun, which is why I teach as I do. So when you come in here, it's good fun coming in here. It's got a good atmosphere. And we don't have bells on this retreat. You can get up when you want. You can go to sleep when you want. That's why you've got your own rooms. And we do not have hidden CCTV cameras in your rooms, I promise. I'm not going to be checking up on you at all. I've got much better things to do than worry about you guys. So because there's no bells, that's the meaning of no bell, silence. That's a terrible joke. Could you get even worse in the next 8 days? No bell silence means no bells. And you know the result of having no bells? Because there's no bells and no bell silence, then some of you will actually win the Nobel Peace Prize. And that's a deep meditation. So you see what bells, this is a symbol of control. Just like the monk controls you. Come on, wake up. Come on, go to bed. Come on. Meditate, come on, walk. That's all about control, making things happen. And we're trying to get away from that and being natural. So for the first few days, you go to bed and you don't have to get up at any time. How rare is that opportunity? Where you go to bed, you've got nothing to do tomorrow morning, nothing to achieve. Probably right, for some people that's the first time in their life. They've gone to bed knowing the following day they can do whatever they want. There's no actually jobs you have to do, no appointments you have to meet. You don't have to be there for breakfast at 7 o'clock. You can fast. But it's an amazing thing. It's amazing. You don't even have to, you know, you may be really jet lagged, really tired. It's amazing. You may not be able to get up from the morning chanting,
But you're always, everybody is up for breakfast. Sometimes you think you should have breakfast at 4 o'clock and then we can, everyone get up some early. So just enjoy the breakfast. And if you're tired, after breakfast go to bed. And get up for lunch at 11 o'clock. And after lunch, go back to bed again. You're allowed to do that. Seriously. In other words, be kind to yourself. But of course, the opportunity to do that is wonderful. I mean, I can actually do that, that's okay, yes. But a lot of times you can't do that. You know why people can't do that? Because they feel guilty. Stupid, stupid, stupid. What are you feeling guilty about? Well, I'm on retreat, I can't do that. Why not? It's not against the rules. Did Bianca say, no, you can only sleep a certain amount of time? Did Bianca say you're not allowed to go to sleep after breakfast and wake up just before lunch? It's not one of the rules. So get into it. But the point is that many of you are sleep deprived. You know, that's one of the reasons why when people meditate they get dull and drowsy. It's nothing to do with, you know, something wrong with their meditation. It's just they're tired. So for the first few days, catch up. Go to bed tonight knowing that it doesn't matter what time you wake up. You just wake up whenever you wake up. If you want to set an alarm for, what time do you have breakfast at 7 o'clock? For 7 o'clock. But actually, you don't have to set the alarm. You wake up by 7, all of you, no matter how tired you are. And you can have a nap afterwards if you like. I'll give a talk at 8 o'clock. Even that's recorded, so you can always catch it up, catch up with it afterwards. Be kind to yourself. Soon there comes a time when you don't want to go to sleep. You've caught up. The body is then relaxed. It's amazing how much you have to fight this body and its needs to survive in our modern world. You get up in the morning, you have to get up to go to work. You have to get up to catch the flight. You have to get up to, you know, to get to that appointment. And you're fighting against this body. On this retreat, don't fight against this body. Work with this body. Treat it with respect for a change. And if you treat the body with respect, the body will really help you. That's why for a few people I encourage you to every now and again ask the body, body, what do you need? What do you want? If you ask the question, it's amazing you get an answer. Sometimes the body says, I want to go for a walk. Give me information. And if you've given the body what it needs, you find when you come and meditate, the body will cooperate. You've looked after the body and the body will now look after you. It won't give you so many aches and pains, so much dullness, so much restlessness. It will cooperate. And that's such an important thing in meditation, for your body to cooperate. So I'm sitting here, okay, come let's watch the breath. Oh no, I ache here. No, I need to go to the toilet. No. It's just because you haven't been kind to the body. So that's great preparation. Not forcing the body. You are not the master and mistress of your body. You cooperate with the body rather than controlling it. You make friends with the body. If you make friends with the body is a friend to you. And it will cooperate and you'll have wonderful meditations. One of the biggest reasons why people don't get deep meditation is because they've hurt the body and the body will not cooperate with you. Too much aches, too much pains, too much dullness, too much restlessness. Just the body throwing a tantrum because you haven't cared for it. So please care for this body in the first few days. And you'll find the meditation goes so much easier. It's all about letting go of control, just being here. And then you'll find things work out so easily, so well. And also that you make your own schedule. After the first couple of days, you know, you wake up. You feel more energy. You just want to meditate. You want to do more walking, more sitting. It's so natural. No force at all. And so you sit here and you beat your records. An hour, 2 hours, you're having a wonderful time. There's no force at all. It just happens. You walk meditation and having a beautiful time, just enjoying yourself, walking an hour, 2 hours. When it gets natural like that, that is when the nice deep meditations happen. Don't force it.
Just allow it to be natural. And that way, no bells. These are the opportunities here. There's a room here. You don't have to meditate in this room. You can meditate in your own bedroom if you like. There's other places around this center where you can meditate. You know, meditate on the stupas. That's a very popular place to meditate. All sorts of places where you meditate. If you like to do those, you know, those super meditations, you can go and meditate in that little cubicle where all the rubbish bins are kept. No one's tried that yet, but that'd be an interesting thing to do. So, lots of stuff you can mess around with. So just make use of the resources of this place and have a wonderful time. Remember, Third Noble Truth meditation. Letting go of all this controlling, all this wanting, all these aspirations, and then you might find some peace and happiness in your life. So that's the introduction talk to give you a taste of freedom. What a wonderful thing it is. Freedom. No boss, no manager, no Adolf Hitler in a brown robe telling you what to do. You are free. So any questions about anything? Good. You can all go to bed. So that's the talk. There will be opportunities for questions. On the first day we don't have interviews, but there'll be a talk tomorrow every morning, 8 till 9 o'clock, a talk about something to do with meditation. And in the evening, was it to 8 o'clock till 9 o'clock, we have the questions and answer sessions. So, just outside there in the foyer, there will be a table. On top of the table will be a basket. Next to the basket will be some pieces of paper with pens. And you're quite invited to write down your questions on those pieces of paper, and I will answer them to the best of my ability, and sometimes to the worst of my ability if they're cheeky questions, in the evening between 8 and 9. And because they're on pieces of paper, they're supposed to be anonymous, but each one of you had to sign a form to actually to come here, at least when you leave anyway, so I can always compare the handwriting and find out which one of you wrote those naughty questions. No, I don't do that. Just write the questions on meditation or something similar, and they will be answered in the evening anonymously. So if you do have questions, please write them down. On Saturday, that's when we will start interviews in the morning and the evening. Just if you need them, then you can have the interviews. But the best way is actually, if you have a question, write it on a piece of paper. Because what usually happens on the interview, someone comes along and says, oh, you know, I couldn't stop thinking, and I give the advice. And the next person comes along and says, oh, I have a problem with thinking, and I give the same advice. And then the third person says, oh, I've been thinking too much. So out of compassion for me, just when you're all asking exactly the same question anyway, just write it on a piece of paper. Don't think that somehow you're different or special or specially worse than the hopeless case. You're all hopeless cases, exactly the same. So just put it on a piece of paper. And that means I can actually be more efficient at answering these questions. I don't have to do so many interviews. But if you have, just want personal contact, especially if you get any really interesting stuff in the meditation, such as, have these great visions, and you see this group of numbers, then please come and tell me. Then you come for the interview, yes. Well, any really interesting stuff, then come and see me. Okay, so that's enough now. So if you want to, got energy, if your body says yes, carry on meditating. If you ask your body, says, no, I just want to sort of go onto my bed, I can just feel the sort of soft mattress and that pillow. I can just visualize the pillow right now. Then that's the sign you need to go and take a rest. So have a nice evening. And in the morning, you should come up here quite early. And what was it, 6 o'clock? Yeah, 6 o'clock we have a bit of chanting. If you want to come for do some bit of chanting, it's very simple chanting. And then after we meditate, and then we have our breakfast. Nice and simple. Okay. Very good. So off you go. Sweet dreams. Oh, deep rest. Come on.
Okay, now look, this is how you do the three sadhus at the end of the talk, especially in the evening. Now, this is a bit of training, so please listen carefully. This is how you do real sadhu. Sadhu! 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 Okay, now again, by yourself. Come on. Very good. I'm sure by the end of the retreat you'll get it properly. Very good. So whatever you're doing in this retreat, put energy into it. And then so you don't get depressed and you don't want to kill yourself. That was really depressing. Sadhu. Okay, so have a nice night. See you in the morning.